Our reading this morning is Psalm 100. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come into His presence with singing. Know that the Lord is God. It is He that made us, and we are His. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Enter His gates with thanksgiving and His courts with praise. Give thanks to Him. Bless His name. For the Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever, and His faithfulness to all generations. Amen. Take a sip of water, it means it's going to be a long one. When I was a probationer in Cape Town, I was asked to conduct a funeral for a family in the congregation. The husband or the dad had died and the family wanted me to conduct the service. They also asked me, because of my dad, whether I could arrange for them to scatter the man's ashes at sea. And I said, I'd see what I could arrange for them. On the day of the funeral and committal of the ashes, we went out to sea on a boat, and the family gathered at the stern as I spoke, and the ashes were scattered. Well, as you can imagine, it was a moving and poignant moment. And then roses were gently thrown into the ocean, and we watched as they floated away. The family were naturally upset, and we stood silently on what was a very grey day. And then something extraordinary happened, something wonderful. A sharp ray of sunlight broke through the grey clouds, and like the point of a laser beam, shone on exactly the spot where the ashes had been scattered and where the roses now floated. It happened again on another occasion, on a day when we laid to rest the ashes of a 14-year-old South African girl who had plummeted to her death in Switzerland while skiing. It was an extremely emotional time for all who were involved. And on that day, another very grey day, as I said the last words of the benediction, as the family said, Amen. A ray of sunlight broke through the clouds and shone on the headstone that had just been laid. I remember looking at the family to see if anyone had seen what I had seen, and whilst the others had their heads bowed, the mum was staring into the sky. Now, I'm quite a skeptic. I really am, even though I'm a minister. But those moments for me were like a message from God that said everything was going to be okay, that their loved ones were safe. Those moments, even though they may well have been a pure coincidence, invoked in me a deep sense of worship, a deep sense of knowing God, a feeling in me that in those moments, God was molding and shaping our hearts, transforming us even then. Friends, it's this that we're going to consider this morning as we continue our adventure into discipleship and what being a disciple means. More specifically, we are going to look at worship and how worship forms and shapes us as disciples. What is worship? According to the online dictionary, or one of the online dictionaries, it means to revere, venerate, adore, esteem, glorify, honor, and praise a deity. This means that worship always has an object. For us, we don't just worship, we worship God. When we come together on a Sunday, for example, to offer praise and give thanks, we don't just speak or sing words and send them into the ether, hoping that something out there might hear them. Instead, we open our hearts and minds to the one who transcends and is beyond all things, the one we call God. We do this to express love and thanksgiving and gratefulness, but we also do it or need to do it expecting some kind of change, perhaps change within us. It may seem strange then to speak of worship as something that can mold us and shape us and change us, but the truth is it does, and it's also vital. One of the reasons it's vital is because we become like the things that we most love and desire. We don't see it always, but we see it often in long-term relationships between people. I don't know if that's a good thing always. We even see it between people and their pets. The adoption of mannerisms born out of love that reflect the other person, or the one who is the object of our care and attention. This doesn't mean that we lose our identity, but simply that love for another molds us and shapes us. It has an effect on us. And thus, in our worship, in our attentiveness to God, to quote Roger Walton, and our expressions of love towards the divine are inevitably shaping who we are. One of the things that really gets up my nose, and there are a few things this morning, I don't know why, in a big way, is the understanding amongst some, and none of them in this church, of course, that worship is about someone standing up at the front and entertaining people. And if the message for the day isn't pithy and exciting, then the entire experience has been a waste of time. You see, friends, for the people in the pews, even though they are sitting down for most of the time, the experience of worship is never meant to be passive. It's actually a time to partake. That partaking may not be anything more than engaging one's heart and one's mind and one's soul as to what is happening at any given time. There is an onus on each one of us in the context of a service of worship to engage and also to be responsible. Responsible for one's own engagement. Not simply as individuals, but also as part of the body. Not simply looking to God, but also partaking in all that God is. The person up front may lead and may pray out loud and may preach, but that person is not an entertainer. That person is a conduit, if you like, a facilitator of worship. The second reason that worship molds us and shapes us, forms us, if you like, is the fact that we believe that God is continually sustaining all things. That God is continually active in the created order, to make it sound really fancy. So at a moment of openness to God, which worship represents, God's grace may have a special opportunity to mold us and shape us. And I believe that that is what happened to me on the night I committed my life to Christ. I believe it's what many people experience at different points in their lives. And it may not be a booming voice from heaven or being in a special place. It may simply be a deep, almost unexplainable sense of assurance that God is present and that somehow everything will be okay. So how does worship shape or form us as disciples? And you'll be pleased to know there are 5 points. First, by placing us within a larger narrative, like being on a tiny boat on a very large sea. when the Apollo astronauts were taking part in missions to land human beings on the moon. They were blessed with the opportunity to see their planet as no one had ever seen it before. And what they saw shook them to the core, because from the vast recesses of space, they were able to see that the Earth wasn't enormous as we who dwell on the ground may think of it. Instead, it was tiny in the grand scheme of things. And it was fragile, and it was beautiful. On the ground, the Vietnam War raged, yet in space, the Earth was a thing of great beauty. And in many who witnessed this, the Earthrise, as it was called, evoked in them a deep desire to worship. On Christmas Eve 1968, the crew of Apollo 8, James Lovell, Ben Anders, and Frank Borman, the first human beings to see the dark side of the moon, upon seeing the Earth as they orbited the moon, read the first 10 verses of Genesis chapter 1. And when they had finished, they said this, and from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless you all of you, on the good earth. 6 months or so later, Buzz Aldrin, the second human being to walk on the moon, took communion. It received permission from the Presbyterian Church's General Assembly to administer communion to himself. Now, if only I'd been older, I could have offered my services. If you look on the pictures, you'll just see me. It was interesting to think, Aldrin said, that the very first liquid ever poured on the moon and the first food eaten there were communion elements. For the astronauts of Apollo 8 and Buzz Aldrin, being in a vast narrative, being part of a vast narrative, evoked in them a desire to worship. They knew they were very small parts of a very large whole. The story is told of the former U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt, that he used to have a little ritual with a famous naturalist friend of his. And after an evening's discussion, the two men would go outside and look into the night sky. Gazing at the stars, they would find the left-hand corner of the great square of Pegasus, and one of them would recite these words: "That is the spiral galaxy of Andromeda. It is as large as our Milky Way. It is one of 100 million galaxies. It is 750,000 light years away. It consists of 100 billion suns, each larger than our own." They would then pause, and Roosevelt would finally say, "Now I think we feel small enough. Let's go to bed." Now, such things may make us feel small, perhaps even insignificant, but they can also invoke in us a deep sense of awe, and from that awe, worship, often in different forms, bubbles forth. Often encouraging or enabling us or giving us the boldness to go further and to give ourselves into God in the service of God and all that God has brought into being. This happens when we realize that the narrative of life is much, much bigger than we might have thought. When our vision is broadened and our blinkers removed. Or to put it another way, when self begins to recede. Second, friends, worship engages us in meaning-making. Meaning-making. What do I mean by this? Simply that worship causes us to reflect. It, as I've said, isn't passive. So, think of this building, this place of worship, not as a place that provides some form of theological entertainment, but as a meaning-making place. meaning and understanding, perhaps facilitated by someone like me, but partaken of by you in terms of engagement and reflection. One of the wonders, I think, of being human is the fact that we have the capacity to reflect, that we are conscious. And when we reflect, when we think about life, our horizons can be stretched, our vision can be broadened, often in a place like this, although it's far from elaborate, through things like symbols and rituals and the words that we use. Worship allows us time to reflect. It encourages reflection. And this leads to my third point, that worship forms attitudes and orientation. Repetition in education, it seems these days, is a bit of a dirty word. But it actually plays an extremely important part in all learning. For example, repetition is foundational if you want to acquire a new language or language skills. We know that if people want to be good at something, the best way of getting good is through practice. And often that practice means loads of repetition. I once read an article or a book about the Special Air Services, the SAS. And in it, one of the soldiers was asked about being scared or being afraid going into battle. And his reply was all about repetition, that they were so well drilled to face any circumstance that they didn't even think about being scared or being fearful. Repetition is important in worship. Why? Because it enables people to become functionally literate as individuals within a body. What I mean by this, in plain and simple English, it enables people to feel that they belong. And it's here that familiarity is a good thing. But friends, it's about more than being functionally literate. It involves being repeatedly involved in meaningful practices and rituals. And these practices and rituals nurture our love for God. For example, the Lord's Prayer. When we say the Lord's Prayer, what do? We place ourselves in the way of the kingdom. And by saying this prayer again and again, we orientate ourselves in the way of Jesus and into the growing life of God's kingdom. Another example is what we will experience today, the communion, where we don't just go through the motions of eating a little block of bread and drinking a few milliliters of grape juice or wine, but remember and enter into the death of Jesus Christ. To use Roger Walton's words again, in a symbolic yet powerful way, we are enacting the truth that the love of God meets destructive evil upon the cross and rises from death to draw all humanity to a feast of equals loved by God. By taking bread and wine, we are aligning ourselves with that way of living. It is forming us at a deep and profound level. In other words, we're not going through the motions because that's the way we've always done things. We are aligning and reminding ourselves with and of the things of God and of God's kingdom. In other words, these acts of worship, these traditions shape us and form us. They become a part of who we are. Fourth, worship involves encountering difference. I like the Hard Rock Cafe, even though just looking at one of its burgers is enough to clog your arteries. And one of the reasons I like it so much is because above its doors it has a slogan, a mission statement, if you like, And that mission statement simply says, love all, serve all. I think if Jesus had gone around with a banner, that's what the banner might have read. One of the things I love about being part of the church is the fact that there is great diversity among its people. That although we might share a number of things in common, we are all still different. You just have to look around you this morning to see that. And I know we've mucked up in the past and still muck up today as a church by sometimes pushing God aside and believing that we have the right to allow or to bar people coming into God's presence. Perhaps to seek God, perhaps to worship. But what we have in terms of difference and diversity, I believe with all my heart, is one of the greatest gifts that we can offer in serving this world. Because it says to the world, all belong here. We might think the world or the church would be a better place if everyone did and thought just like us. But isn't it wonderful that we can come together with our differences and still live in relationship? That in Jesus we have a common denominator who says, don't try and mold each other into your own images before you can get along. Just keep your eyes on me and follow me. Worship draws people together even in their diversity. It invites us to a place to place ourselves in a bigger frame of reference or a bigger narrative or a bigger story. To work at meaning for our own lives alongside others. To make sense of why others are here and what is our relationship to them. In order to get our heads and hearts around difference and diversity, however, because let's face it is a challenge, we need to understand very clearly one more thing. And that is worship as an openness to God's grace. I remember times watching the proceedings as the Truth and Reconciliation Committee met in South Africa to hear people's stories under apartheid. And often their stories were heart-wrenching and heartbreaking. I remember there were times during the proceedings where it all got a little too much. Tempers were flaring, accusations were being flung, and darkness was everywhere. And often in these times, Archbishop Tutu would call the people to prayer, and the light of God would remove the darkness as God's grace filled that place. Philip Yancey got it right when he said, God, grace means that there's nothing we can do to make God love us more, and there's nothing that we can do to make God love us less. And worship, friends, allows for us to realize this, not only in terms of ourselves, but also in terms of others. Too often we are far too quick to speak our opinions, and we lose the opportunity to let the grace of God transform us and also those around us. Now, I know I've said a lot, but I want to remind you of one more thing in terms of worship. And that is that transformation doesn't depend on the worship being exciting or different. Rather, it is the willingness of people wanting to be together, wanting to worship together, wanting to learn together, that brings about change. Because together, we are open to each other and also to God. In worship, friends, in all the different ways that worship may take place, disciples are formed and transformed. And worship is a place of encounter with God. It is a place of honesty, of vulnerability, of faith, no matter how small, and it is a space shared with others who have also discovered Jesus or something of Him and want to discover more and journey with Him. It's not the case that disciples are formed and then take part in mission and worship. Rather, it is precisely in doing these things that disciples are made, formed, and transformed, molded and shaped by the good things of God and God's kingdom. In 2 weeks' time, we will continue. And then we're going to look at something called community. Amen.